The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
...of the following resolution. Whereas on Monday, April the 2nd, the Minister responsible for the voluntary sector presented the 38th Annual Provincial Volunteer Awards to 69 volunteers from across Nova Scotia, and whereas volunteers are an integral part of our communities, giving their time and expertise to improve the lives of those around them. And whereas Shannon and Stephanie Venedem, sisters from Antigonish County, were recognized for their volunteer coaching at various levels of soccer in Antigonish, as well as their work in Pumpkin and around St. Francis Xavier University. Therefore, be it resolved that all members of the House of Assembly congratulate Shannon and Stephanie Venedem on their awards, thank them for their contributions to the community, and wish them all the best in their future endeavors. Mr. Speaker, I request waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those against say nay. Motion is carried. Orders of the day. Oral questions put by members to ministers. It is now approximately 2:54. We will finish at 4:24. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Premier stood in this House in front of the television cameras calling the Schenecto Board's decision to lay off librarians, and I quote, a political game, Mr. Speaker. We saw there's many Nova Scotians who believed yesterday the Premier was the one playing the political games, Mr. Speaker, and after the ministerial statement by the Minister of Education, she seemed to have joined in to those political games that this government seems to be playing with our students and education, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is, why does the NDP government continue to try to avoid taking responsibility for the pain and harm that their $60 million cuts have caused the public education system?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, this government's investing more money than ever in the health, in the education system. The highest per capita rates for per student in our history, Mr. Speaker, and you know what we simply are pointing out to people in this province is that we want to ensure that the boards make use of the money and get the provincial dollars invested right into the classroom for the kids.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Speaker, the Premier continues to chastise the boards publicly, Mr. Speaker, and I quote, I am distressed to see the board, who are supposed to be our partners of the provincial government in the delivery of the appropriate educational services, making decisions that, in my opinion, are simply designed to try to embarrass the government. And to quote, Mr. Speaker, I would think the most embarrassing thing for this government would be the $60 million that they've cut for public education. Mr. Speaker. When is the government going to stop publicly chastising the boards for making the decisions that are being forced upon them by the Minister of Education?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the school boards have a difficult job. They have a job to do. They have a responsibility to people, and we are simply asking that they accept the responsibility that they asked for.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Speaker, they've accepted that responsibility, and across this province, school boards are responding to the needs of students each and every day, Mr. Speaker. Let me remind the government and let me remind the Premier it is his responsibility to deliver the fiscal envelope to school boards across this province. Mr. Speaker, the Premier has said many times in this House, Mr. Speaker, the Premier has said many times in this House, it is up to the boards how they deliver that funding and what programs they offer. He's said that many times in this House. So my question to the Premier, if they're not going to cut library technicians, Mr. Premier, what services do you propose they cut?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'll say again, they should take a good hard look at their administrative costs. That's one place that they could begin, Mr. Speaker. The simple fact of the matter is we are responsible for providing the boards with the money to deliver the education for kids in this province, which we do. What we do not do is give them a blank check, Mr. Speaker, and I don't think people in Nova Scotia expect that. They expect the boards to use very wisely the money that we give them and make sure that that money gets to the kids.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Yesterday, the Premier told all of us that school boards are supposed to be partners in education with his government. Then, both inside this House and outside this House, he accused the Chignecto Central Regional School Board of playing games in an attempt to embarrass his government. Well, Mr. Speaker, partnership is supposed to work both ways. So my question to the Premier, how is name-calling an example of partnership?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not name-calling. I'm simply naming what is happening.
Honourable the Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, here is what is happening. The Premier likes to talk about partnerships with school boards, but his actions are exactly the opposite. When he wants a new school, political or otherwise, he's happy to cut the ribbon and take credit for it as his decision. When there are cuts to be made, cuts imposed by his government, he passes the buck off to someone else. Today on CBC, the Chignecto Central Regional School Board Superintendent, Mr. Gary Clark, said that far from playing political games, he found this year's budget process at his school board the hardest he's seen in his decades as an educator. So my question to the Premier, rather than engaging in more name-calling, will he now apologize to Mr. Clark for his treatment of Mr. Clark and the Chignecto Central School Board yesterday in this House and outside?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, last year we saw the same thing with the same board. They go through this process where they drive up fear in people. They say there are going to be all these teachers that lose their jobs. That doesn't happen, Mr. Speaker. I am not only not going to apologize, I'm going to reiterate that they got to get on with doing their jobs.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the students at Cobequid Educational Centre in Truro are rallying as we speak. Clearly, they want library services and a quality education and the funding that goes along with it. So my question to the Premier, are those students playing a political game too?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, those students are speaking out on behalf of library services in that board, which they deserve to receive.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the last budget session, the Chignecto Regional School Board cut 20% from its administrative costs in its board, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, many of the people left in that board are there to deliver programs that are demanded by provincial governments. Mr. Speaker, all at the same time, though, in the minister's department, you have a new position created for associate deputy minister. We have an increase in administrative costs, Mr. Speaker. Almost every budget line is going up in her department, but yet school boards are being asked to deliver more with less. Can the Premier tell Nova Scotians why his Minister of Education deserves more, but our students deserve less?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, he knows that's not true. He knows that exactly the same person in the same position with a different title. No different employee whatsoever, Mr. Speaker. The fact of the matter is we are streamlining the budget of this province. We're taking out FTEs where we are capable of doing that without destroying the service. We're doing it in a common sense, reasonable way in order to make sure that the money that the taxpayers of Nova Scotia entrust us with are spent in the most effective and efficient way.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Speaker, I would suggest the Premier read the budget that was delivered here last week, Mr. Speaker. There's no question. There's administrative costs going up in the Department of Education, Mr. Speaker. We've created a new position, Mr. Speaker. It may be some, maybe the same person from the department filling it, but he's getting paid more money, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there are more FTAs. There are more FTAs being budgeted in the Department of Education, Mr. Speaker, all at the same time. This Premier is bullying school boards across the province and telling them to do more with less, Mr. Speaker. I want the Premier to stand up and tell Nova Scotians how they are going to deliver their education without the proper funding.
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I think the Leader of the Opposition ought to read the budget. Number of FTEs in the Department of Education went down, not up, Mr. Speaker. The school boards in this province are receiving the highest level of funding per student in their history.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Speaker, it may be the highest funding per student in our history, Mr. Speaker, but a lot of that is being sucked right over into the Department of Education and not being delivered where it should be. Mr. Speaker, the Premier talks about forcing school boards to deliver educational to the students and at the desk, Mr. Speaker. Maybe he better start by telling the minister to stop pulling the money that goes should be going to school boards and hiding it in her department, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, why doesn't the Premier finally show some leadership and stand up for students in this province and demand that we have a reduction in the Department of Education and deliver that money directly to the students in this province?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, it's an absolute fantasy on behalf of the Leader of the Opposition. There are less FTEs in the Department of Education, more money going into the pockets of the board so that they can deliver services to students in this province.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Libraries are a valuable source within our public school resource within our public schools. They are the hubs of independent learning and research and for developing literacy skills and for fostering a love of reading. With this government's gutting of public education system, boards are being forced to close their school libraries. Last year, it was the South Shore Regional School Board who lost 80% of their library technicians, and this year it's Chignecto. Teachers report that librarians often organize author visits and after-school activities. So my question to the minister is this: does the minister, and to what extent does she, value library services?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And not only do I value libraries, I'm sure that everyone in this House values libraries. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, as a direct result of this government's callous cuts, many librarians and library technicians in Chignecto Board may lose their job and they may lose the support of that valuable learner. Yesterday, Mr. Speaker, during question period, the Premier said, "This is nothing but a political game being played by the school board." Mr. Speaker, nothing could be further from the truth. The school boards are not playing political games. The students are not interested in playing political games or being used in a political game. They're looking to this minister for support. So, will the minister demonstrate that support that she has stated that she has for school libraries? Will she demonstrate that and provide targeted money to the school boards to save their libraries?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I think that I demonstrated my commitment to the libraries in Chignecto Regional School Board by my ministerial statement today, by telling the school board that we will be providing someone from the department to go down and help them with their budget deliberations. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we did talk about targeted money. I thought the minister knew what targeted money was, and saying somebody's going to help them look at their books has nothing to do with saving libraries. Mr. Speaker, school boards are in their second year of severe funding cuts at the hands of this government. The minister has stated that these will not have a negative impact on students. So my question to the minister is this: will she be prepared to meet with those students who are marching right now because they value education and let them know and let her let her hear from them what kind of negative impact these cuts are having.
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to remind the member opposite that we are investing in our students. We're investing in our school boards. We have increased funding per student in this province. We have the lowest student ratio in a decade. So, Mr. Speaker, we value kids and learning first, and we are making sure that we are investing in our students. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. The government likes to talk about its funding to education, but unfortunately they're putting it in all the wrong places. The Premier imposes restraint on the Chignecto Central Regional School Board and other school boards, but it's a restraint that is not practiced by the head office of his own Department of Education. The fact of the matter is that the year-end forecast for full-time people at the department itself for the year just ended was 177. The budget for the year that we are now into is 194. That is 17 vacant positions that they continue to fund while they cut 41 librarians out of one school board. So my question to the Premier is, why cut schools and add more at the top of the department?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, that's not what's happening. In fact, he would know that he is comparing apples and oranges. In fact, the numbers that he's using include positions that were vacant in the previous year, Mr. Speaker. They were still funded FTEs. The overall number of FTEs in the province have gone down by 7, and I tabled that information for your information last week.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, who is playing games now? I am quoting page 7.2 of the budget estimates for the Department of Education.
Order, please. Not questions on budget estimates during question period, please. General questions on the budget will be allowed. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My point is, who is playing games now? Facts and figures are being thrown around, but here is a number that every Nova Scotian can understand, and I quote from the government's own headcount report. Headcount, not FTEs, how many people, how many heads at the Department of Education for the most recent year. It was 193 last year. It's 196 this year. That's plus 3 in headcount, something every Nova Scotian can understand. It is up, not down, and I will table the headcount report for the Premier's own perusal. On top of that, Mr. Speaker, the Office of the Minister, the Office of the Deputy Minister, the Communications Secretary of Education in total are going to cost Nova Scotians $884,000 this year, an increase of $219,000 over last year. My question to the Premier, why cut schools and add more fat at the top?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, again, we want to talk about playing games. He's using a headcount number, which, of course, if you have two people sharing an FTE, you get two people, Mr. Speaker. So he's trying to manipulate that data to tell people something that simply isn't true, which is that there are less FTEs in the Department of Education. In fact, the Department of Education is sharing in the burden of making sure we get back to balance.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Speaker, FTEs are up at the department. Headcount is up at the department. The only thing that is not on the up and up is the Premier's answer to these questions. That's why I ask, who is playing political games now? No wonder parents are so frustrated in Truro today. No wonder the students are rallying when those kind of manipulations go on. So my question to the Premier, when will he end his own budgetary game plan?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, for the edification of the member, the leader of the Conservative Party. I'm going to table now the average per student funding graph over the last 10, 12 years. What it shows is, of course, while the former leader of the Conservative Party and former education minister, now the Liberal member for Colchester North, was the Minister of Education, the amount of student funding stretched from 8,217 to 9,258 this year. It'll be $10,457 per student.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Mr. Speaker, the Education Minister struck an anti-bullying task force to study the problem plaguing the youth of Nova Scotia. The task force produced a report with 85 well-documented and well-researched recommendations. This government has a very poor record of effectively and efficiently implementing any strategies, and they frequently suffer from delays. But, Mr. Speaker, we can't afford any delays in implementing these recommendations. So my question to the Minister is this. When will the Minister produce a timeline outlining the implementation of the report's recommendations?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Soon, very soon.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, we might be amused by that, but it's a sad state when we have kids that are bullied and they're suffering both physically and emotionally. And the best this minister can say is soon, very soon. Mr. Speaker, anti-bullying report recommends hiring more guidance counselors and providing more mental health resources. This government has cut $65 million from education, $60 million from health care, and they still have not produced their mental health strategy, which was promised 2 years ago. Mr. Speaker, this government is not fond of investing in education or in health. The problem of bullying, however, needs to be addressed now. So my question to the minister is this. Does the minister really believe that a $350,000 social media marketing campaign is the answer to a very serious problem?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The issue of bullying has been being worked on in every school in this province in Nova Scotia on a daily basis. The work has not stopped in the department or in any school or in any community around anti-bullying just because we're still working on the recommendations. This government has taken those recommendations. We're working with them. We're working with our partners. We're in discussions. We are moving forward with the recommendations. Shortly, I will be bringing things to the House around the cyberbullying, but I want to make everyone to be very aware that this is a very, very serious problem, and everyone needs to be part of the solution. Schools are working on this on a daily basis. We are going to be moving forward with the recommendations to see what we can do together, collectively, as a community, to work towards removing bullying out of our society. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is a serious issue. It is something that needs to be addressed. It is something that is ongoing, and it's a social issue, and the schools are one place, only one place, where we try to address this problem. Mr. Speaker, the report recommended hiring an anti-bullying coordinator to oversee the implementation of the recommendations, and even though that recommendation was endorsed by Bullying Canada, the Education Minister blasted the recommendations, saying, and I quote, "We need to make sure we're not adding more people into an existing system." Mr. Speaker, this is the same minister who increased the amount of spending on the senior management within her own department by close to $250,000, yet she fails to see the urgency in addressing and implementing recommendations of the report. So my question to the minister is this. If she's not prepared to accept the recommendation to hire an anti-bullying coordinator, who within the department has been asked to take the lead on that?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. I was very clear in making sure that we are not adding another level of bureaucracy. I have never said that I was not endorsing an anti-bullying coordinator. I would like to also be very clear that the Department of Education has reduced administration, and unfortunately, this is one of the symptoms of bullying in this province, is when people are not honest and truthful with their comments and their facts, then people get misinformation. It's important that we stand as role models. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Mr. Speaker, last week the NDP rolled out their votes and pork barreling first plan. But Mr. Speaker, we know about one vote they didn't get by. Mr. Speaker, some parents in Eastern Passage have questions. In an email, one Eastern Passage mother was concerned about the same time the NDP's government is making education cuts, they have $15 million lying around to create a high school. And she said, something is wrong when you are faced with laying off teachers but are putting millions of dollars into an unnecessary school. So my question to the minister is, will the Minister of Education admit that in a time when students in other parts of the province are being forced to go without library services because of their government's misplaced priorities, $15 million would be better spent on the priorities of our school boards and not the political priorities of the NDP.
Order, please. Order. I remind the Honourable Member that he must say who the person is before you read the email. You have to say who it is and then say the quote. Well, without that, I find that it's hard to deal with that question. Without that, that's the procedures that we follow here in this house. So I'm going to, Okay, but I'd like to see that information tabled before the end of QP. Thank you. The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We are investing in our students' education, and part of the Kids and Learning First plan, we said that we were increasing skilled trades. Because we're putting skilled trades in Cole Harbour, this makes it necessary for a high school in Eastern Passage. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, other concerns of Eastern Passage families was the fate of the elementary school students who currently attend a school that will be reconfigured into a high school. Where will the children whose school becomes a high school attend classes? Will they be split up? What will the addition of these students do to the class size of the new schools they have to attend? My question to the minister is, will the Minister of Education reassure parents of elementary school children in Eastern Passage that she has considered the future of their children at least as much as they considered the political future of the member of Cole Harbour Eastern Passage when she decides to build another school for political reasons?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you very much for the question. The configuration of where the schools are going to be and the renovations, alterations, and the configurations of schools are in the hands of the school board, and actually they welcome to be able to make sure that where children are going and the grade configurations are appropriate for the community. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, one of the reasons the Premier actually gave with a straight face for building on the new high school is to house some of the students when the renovations are done to the other school. When the renovations are being made to create a high school in Eastern Passage, where will the elementary school students go who attend that school? And will the votes in Pork Barreling First Plan produce another school in another NDP riding?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Kids and Learning First plan is our blueprint for student success, and part of that is making sure that we provide opportunities for every student in this province. We are making sure that the skilled trades are going to be on the Dartmouth side in Cole Harbour, and the configuration of the schools in the Eastern Passage are going to be taken with the best interest of every child in that community.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians are feeling the NDP education cuts, and they're feeling them directly in the classrooms. Last year, 553 positions were eliminated due to the decisions made by this education minister, although they, of course, try to pin it on the boards. So my question, Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Education explain how cutting positions, how cutting jobs, will do anything except make it harder for students to succeed and send qualified educators out of the province to look for work?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I would just like to remind the members opposite that no teacher lost their job last year. We have a huge... I will repeat that. No teacher lost their job last year. Unfortunately, we are dealing with declining enrollment. We have been losing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of children out of our school system. We have a problem, and we need to make sure that we are making our students be successful. We are investing strategically. We are making sure that our children come first.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. 82 teacher positions were cut to meet the budget targets set by this minister. 136 program specialists were eliminated, Mr. Speaker. 75 teaching assistants for students in the classrooms were cut. In addition, 132 support positions were eliminated, Mr. Speaker. Will the Minister of Education explain how she intends to improve, or let's be honest here, how she intends to even maintain educational quality when she's cutting jobs and driving educators away from the province of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We are increasing our student funding. It is at the highest level that it has ever been. We have the lowest student-to-teacher ratio in a generation.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The education cuts by the NDP government are certainly affecting classrooms, but it's not just the disappearing jobs and classroom supports which are impairing educational success. Schools are having to defer upgrades to technology, abandon improvements to resources and supports, and are requiring classroom teachers, professional educators to spend more time not teaching. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Education acknowledge that our education cuts will not only further harm students and learning and reverse this misguided and short-sighted decision to cut these budgets?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. As part of the Kids and Learning First plan, we are exploring, along with teachers, on how we can reduce the paperwork, because teachers are telling us that they're spending a lot of time, so we are acknowledging that. We want to make sure that our teachers are in the classroom working with our students, and we're working on that together, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question to you is to the Minister of Community Services. Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Community Services has refused to take responsibility for her failure to contact the East Preston Daycare when she was notified about an alleged abuse of working there. Mr. Speaker, a mother of a preschooler at the daycare told reporters on March 3rd that, and I quote, Community Services Department having heard even an allegation about the presence of a potential abuser should have acted immediately. Mr. Speaker, that same mother also said she was disgusted that no action was taken sooner. So my question to the Minister, what excuse does the Minister have for this mother? Does she believe the parents of East Preston did not deserve to know?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said before, and I'll repeat again and again, we took immediate action. We were informed on November the 15th, 2010. We acted the same day. And to me, that's an immediate action. And we also followed protocol, which is protocol that existed when that party was in government. No difference. No difference.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We're still waiting to see that protocol that exists.
Right. Where is it?
Mr. Speaker, Krista Dix, mother of a two-year-old little girl who goes to the East Preston daycare, told CTV reporters that she feels terrified, disgusted, and failed. Another parent told reporters that, and I quote again, community services needs to step up. This is huge. This is unbelievable. These are children. So my question, why didn't the minister do her job? Will the minister tell these parents why she let a man with allegations of pedophilia against him continue to work with these little girls and boys 8 months longer than she had to?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I'll be very clear. I had tabled yesterday three articles that indicated in the article that the daycare was aware for well over 10 years of these allegations. We also followed protocol. Anything dealing with children is very concerning to us. We look after children every day, so we took every step that we should have taken, and it was immediate steps. And it's, you know, it's just a shame that's it's a real shame that any political party would try to gain political points on the emotions of children and parents. And all I can say is shame on them.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Well, Mr. Speaker, our job is to ask tough questions. The minister's job is to answer them.
That's right.
If she's not up to that job, there's a solution for that as well.
Exactly.
Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians have a right to know that this minister did her job to protect vulnerable children. The more the minister tries to deflect, the more it becomes clear she's not up to the job. Mr. Speaker, the Children and Family Services Act states children are entitled to protection from abuse and neglect.
That's right.
In this case, the minister failed to do her job. She did not provide any protection to those children. When the board of directors at the daycare heard about the allegations from a reporter last June, they held an emergency meeting and fired the person.
They did the right thing.
When the minister heard, she did absolutely nothing to alert the daycare.
Right.
The only reason the situation went on so long is because of that minister. She let the media do her job. The media did the right thing. So my question, Mr. Speaker, there are no more excuses. The minister needs to admit today that she is wrong. She failed to do the right thing. Will the minister finally admit this to these parents?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, once again, I'll be very clear. The fact is when we were notified of the situation, we took immediate action. We contacted the Halifax Regional Police Force and the RCMP Major Crime Unit. We did an internal investigation. We checked the Child Abuse Registry. We also know that the daycare did know about the allegations for over 10 years. I have tabled three articles that state that. We took every action. The act that they're referring to talks about if there's a current... The act, Mr. Speaker, clearly states that if there's a current issue of concern, that we can go and follow the process with that. We took the protocol process.
Order, please. Order, please. Order, please. Thank you. The Honourable Minister of Community Service.
Mr. Speaker, I can't be any more clear in the fact that we followed the protocol that is set out. There is a protocol. This was a historical allegation that is not covered in the Act. And the fact is, again, we took immediate action. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Education keeps talking about student-teacher ratios in our province. However, her numbers are simply misleading. A more accurate description of what she's talking about would be the student-to-employee ratio, considering that the numbers include more than simply classroom teachers. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Education provide a list of all positions included in a ratio? Does it include principals, vice principals, support staff? Exactly what is being counted?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The ratio for teachers in our system to children is 12.9. If you take out administrators, I will take the administrators out of that number, and the ratio is 14.7. But the real test is how many children are in the class? And we have the lowest class sizes in elementary, junior high, and in high school than we have had in a generation.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Because of the NDP cuts to education, class sizes are increasing, and teachers are being forced to spend less time teaching. The Minister knows this. This is why she increased the minimum class size. Larger class sizes mean that there are more students for every teacher in the classroom, contrary to what this Minister and this government keep saying. With more students, the classroom teacher has less time to deliver the quality of education we expect from our schools. If the minister is accurate about the average class size, why did she increase the maximum class size from grades primary to grade 4 from 27 to 29 kids?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you. I just would like to repeat that we have the lowest class sizes in elementary, junior high, and high school than we have had in a generation.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, when the Minister continues to use her student-administrator ratio, it distorts the reality of the situation faced in classrooms across our province, many of which are over 30 kids, Mr. Speaker. The education cuts are putting the quality of our students' education at risk. Mr. Speaker, when will the Minister stand up for Nova Scotia students and tell the Premier that she's not to continue to damage our education system with these deep, impacting NDP education cuts?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We are investing in our children more than we ever have. We have increased the per student funding. And we have a plan, Mr. Speaker. We have a plan, the Kids and Learning First, which are providing more opportunities for every student in this province. We support our students to be successful. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, the Liberal caucus remains very concerned about cuts to our education system. Yesterday, I asked the Minister of Education about her spending $124,000 of taxpayers' money to buy orange lunch bags for pre-primary children. At a time when this minister has cut funding to school boards, which will impact librarians and teachers' aides, one has to question the wisdom of spending $124,000 on orange lunch bags. Yesterday, the minister said school boards ask for these orange lunch bags. My question to the minister is, will she table in the House today the correspondence to confirm this?
Honourable the Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. We have provided literacy supports to our youngest children in our system. Children that are coming into primary receive a bag full of things that support literacy development and creativity. CDs, books, crayons, scissors are in there. And, you know, it would be very nice to have been able to source as much as we could from Nova Scotia. Many things are from Nova Scotia, but unfortunately we weren't able to find a company in Nova Scotia that produced crayons. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Well, you might want also question whether there's any company in Nova Scotia that produces lunch bag or does printing, because apparently that was done in Ontario, not here in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, the minister has confirmed that the NDP orange lunch bags has been sent to four school boards for $124,000 of taxpayers' money. One such board is the Strait Regional School Board, which, ironically, recently voted to close three community schools due to budget cuts imposed by this NDP government. Mr. Speaker, while the NDP continues to run politically motivated ads which tell Nova Scotians that schools are the heart of a community, the NDP has remained silent while three community schools were closed in the Strait area. So my question is, how can the minister justify spending $124,000 on orange lunch bags while schools are being closed in the Strait area?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We have provided literacy support to our youngest children coming into school. This government also has changed the formula to make sure that we are supporting our small and isolated schools. We have increased $22 million going to our small and isolated schools in this province. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, obviously your funding isn't working very well in the Strait area, where three communities, one in my riding, one in the riding of Andy Ganish, and one in the riding of Guysborough Sheet Harbour, the last two being government ridings, certainly they have not seen the benefit of the Minister's new funding formula to save small community schools. Mr. Speaker, as part of the review process by the school board, parents, educators and students wrote to the Minister of Education asking for her intervention in the process. The minister was asked for a meeting. She has not agreed to any meeting, and responses were only sent to parents after the decision had been made to close these schools. Mr. Speaker, in her statement earlier today, the minister said, "I have heard from parents and students about the options that the Chignecto Central Board is considering, and I shared their deep concerns. These decisions are unacceptable. That is why I sent a letter to the Chignecto Central Board today telling them not to finalize their proposed budget cuts pending an immediate provincial review of their spending options." My question to the Minister of Education on behalf of the parents, the students and the teachers of those three schools is, why did the Minister of Education not do the same thing before the Strait Regional School Board closed three schools?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. Under the legislative process, the school review is very clearly mandated, and it is not to be interfered with by the minister. The school review process is a very clearly articulated process where parents and community have the opportunity on two separate occasions to offer their input to the process and to the board. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On February 8th of 2011, in correspondence from the Minister to the South Shore Regional School Board, she stated that the cost of delivering the Reading Recovery Program was $7.1 million. At the time, eliminating Reading Recovery was touted by this government as being a cost-saving measure. So how many dollars, to the Minister, how many dollars did the Minister plan to save by eliminating Reading Recovery?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. We brought in a program called Succeeding in Reading to make sure we were meeting our youngest children's needs. This government did not want to see children wait till grade one, and then almost through a lottery system, one or two children getting Reading Recovery. We wanted to get in to make sure that our children are supported early in primary and carried through as they need support when they need it, not wait for one or two spots in a Reading Recovery program that was expensive. We are spending money wisely to reach more students.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The question was, how much did the minister plan to save? The second comment is, I'm not sure what board she worked with, but I've never heard of a lottery system to qualify for Reading Recovery. Mr. Speaker, Educators all across this province know the value of reading recovery. School boards recognize the value of reading recovery. It was part of an early literacy initiative. It was not a single program, as this minister believes, was the only program. It was not the only program, Mr. Speaker. It was one of a whole array of programs to support early literacy in our schools. They asked the minister from the South Shore Regional School Board if they could continue the program at their own cost, because they recognized the kids who were learning to read through that program. So, Mr. Speaker, when boards wanted to continue that program, why did the minister deny them and those kids the opportunity?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We are making sure that we are providing the appropriate service at the appropriate developmental stage in children's literacy development. We are making sure that we have teachers, early literacy specialists, that work in the classroom with our youngest students to support them as they're learning to read and write. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm glad to see the minister acknowledges the benefits of the Reading Recovery Program in one sense, because the teachers who are delivering the new framework that she talks about, Mr. Speaker, are the Reading Recovery trained teachers in this province. Mr. Speaker, these teachers are highly skilled at early literacy intervention, and they're a great resource in our public education system. Hundreds of students in the Reading Recovery Program have been successful and are confident young readers. And for a nominal licensing fee of approximately $3,000 per board, hundreds of our current students could still be benefiting from Reading Recovery. So my question to the minister, how can the minister deny the students that we have as most vulnerable in grade one, how can she deny them the opportunity to take advantage of a program that may work for them?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you. The Honourable Member made a comment. It may work for them, and that is just the problem with reading recovery. Unfortunately, our data states that by the time that children made it to grade three, the significant gains they had made, they had lost. It was not sticking. And we also know with reading recovery, not every student is recorded. If they are excused from the reading recovery program, without succeeding, their name drops off the data. We make sure that our students in primary and one, and now in grade two, are going to have the supports they need. And reading recovery teachers are the ones that are doing early literacy, because they have training in early literacy, and they are trained experts, and they are now meeting the needs of more of our students in our system.
The Honourable Member for Bedford-Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, imagine a typical Nova Scotia classroom. The class includes a high-needs autistic child and two children with ADHD, not an uncommon experience here in this province. Now, suddenly, the teacher, who used to have a full-time educational assistant, now only has a part-time one, the result of NDP budget cuts. So as if the demands on the teacher weren't challenging enough, that teacher is now left to provide a quality education for all students with fewer resources at his or her disposal. I'm wondering, Mr. Speaker, how would the Minister of Education cope with this situation if she experienced those cutbacks in her classroom?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. The issue around teacher assistance or educational assistance is based on the need of a child. Through the process of an individualized, an IPP, it is determined when a child needs a TA. We are going to make sure, we are making sure, school boards are making sure, schools are making sure that children that need support are receiving the support that they need.
The Honourable Member for Bedford-Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the minister should try talking to parents, because they don't say that. Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I don't think I need to tell you that no one wins in this classroom. The students with special needs have lost their valuable support system, and they've lost their best opportunity to learn. The other children in the class will not receive the attention from the teacher that they need and deserve, and the teacher's resources are stretched to the breaking point. Mr. Speaker, could the minister please tell us how a high-needs autistic student is experiencing a better educational experience when the valuable resources the student relies on have been chopped in half by her government?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. I don't know this particular case, but any student, any child that has autism, we make sure that they're through their individual planning program, which involves a team approach, which is the teacher, the administration, resource teachers, maybe outside agency. But the key person on every team is the parent. And the parent and the team determine what supports the student needs in the school.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know what fantasy land the minister is living in, but sure isn't the Nova Scotia educational system. Man, talk to any parent who's been through that process. Jeez, it's this NDP government that has spent $90,000 on advertising, telling the world they're putting kids and learning first, and nothing could be further from the truth. Mr. Speaker, the needs in the classroom have not diminished, and despite what the minister has said, neither have the class sizes. The only thing that's changed is that this government has decimated the support system for these students. They have failed them, and they have failed the teachers who want to teach those students. Well, the minister admit that by cutting educational assistance in the classroom, she has compromised the ability of teachers to deliver a quality education to our most vulnerable students and deprive those students of their rightful education and a meaningful future.
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. This government has increased their allocation for special needs spending in our budget, and students that need support do receive the support they need. It is a team approach with the parent and with the teachers and with the resource teachers. There is a process in place. And I would like to just remind people opposite that it is very important that we follow along with our IPP process to make sure that the appropriate supports are in place for our students.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Community Services, after weeks of silence, finally admitted that she learned on November 15, 2010, that an alleged pedophile worked at the East Preston daycare. Yet, she did nothing. Nothing to notify the current board or the parents, and it was left to Frank Magazine. Frank Magazine, Mr. Speaker, to let them know 8 months later. 8 months later, that is a complete failure to do her job to protect little children, a sacred duty under the Children and Family Services Act. She now owes people a full explanation, Mr. Speaker, not just excuses. Did the minister learn the full gravity of the evidence against his alleged pedophile from Justice on November 15th? And if not, when was her department fully appraised of all evidence and allegations against the alleged pedophile?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Once again, let's review some of the facts. The fact is that the daycare was aware of the allegations for over 10 years. The fact is that we took immediate action the very same day we learned of the allegations. The fact is that we contacted the Halifax Regional Department Police Force and the RCMP. The fact is that we did an internal investigation. The fact is that we checked the Child Abuse Registry. The fact is that we followed protocol. And if they can't understand, and it's a real shame that they think that this is something that they want to gain political points on the emotions of such a serious issue. So shame on them.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in her answer yesterday and just now, The minister refers to an internal investigation being conducted. Now, people don't just do internal investigations unless there's a need to look long and hard at what was done by government itself. So my question, what precisely was looked at in this internal investigation, and did that investigation include interviewing or reviewing material from anyone from the Justice Department?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I've answered this question over and over again, and if he can't take it in, tell him to sit down and read Hazard.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this is an extremely serious matter, and the minister just can't blow it off. And that's exactly what she is trying to do. Justice had to defend lawsuits about the alleged serious sexual assaults at the Home for Colored Children. They told community services. I am looking for a very short answer from this minister, Mr. Speaker. Were officials in her department briefed about the progress of lawsuits by victims of this alleged pedophile by officials or lawyers from Justice? Yes or no? And was it ever discussed or even considered, yes or no, what the impact of the minister notifying the daycare or taking stronger action might have had on the province's position in the lawsuit?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, as I have indicated before, we took immediate action. We took the appropriate action. And if he can't understand that, that's his problem. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Energy. Mr. Speaker, today we learned from the CEO of Efficiency Nova Scotia that the Department of Community Services and possibly other departments have accessed funding from the corporation to pay for upgrades and efficiency, energy efficiencies to properties owned and operated by the province. So, Mr. Speaker, Efficiency Nova Scotia, and more importantly, Nova Scotia Power ratepayers, are effectively subsidizing the Department of Community Services for energy upgrades that the province should be able to pay for from their own budget, as they require municipalities to do. So, Mr. Speaker, would the Minister of Energy please explain why funding to improve energy efficiency in government buildings is not coming from departmental budgets?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. Certainly, I think all Nova Scotians are interested in supporting programs that will save money on our energy costs, whether that's a homeowner or a small business, large corporate interest, or a government building. And this program that's underway is saving a considerable amount of money, I think somewhere in the range of $100 million a year. Why wouldn't we want to save that money?
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, isn't it interesting that this government decided to tell municipalities that they should pay for the LED streetlight upgrades through the future cost savings, but they want to raid the bills of Nova Scotia Power's ratepayers to pay for their energy efficiency upgrades? That's not fair. You know, Mr. Speaker, this government added a new electricity tax to power bills of ratepayers after opposing the Tory plan to do just that during the election.
Oh.
And then they raided the fund. And of course, improving energy efficiency in government-owned and operated facilities is important, but the minister can't possibly believe that government departments should be taking opportunities from residents and businesses of this province when the government could fund the initiatives itself. So, Mr. Speaker, does the minister believe government departments should stop raiding Efficiency Nova Scotia programs so that more nonprofits, low-income families, and indeed families and businesses from across this province can access more efficiency funding?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, we do have a number of good programs for low-income Nova Scotians, programs that do with weather stripping or insulation or air sealing, insulating the hot water tank, and so on. So those are all of benefit to low-income Nova Scotians. A lot of seniors, unfortunately, are low-income as well, and they would benefit from any of those programs. So there's programs out there for everybody, whether it's an existing home, a new home, a small business, large businesses, and, yes, even government buildings. It's all saving money for Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, isn't it interesting that the government chooses to tell municipalities to fund energy savings one way, but doesn't follow their own advice to the municipality? You know, Mr. Speaker, the NDP had a choice to abandon the Tory proposal to tax Nova Scotia Power customers and have shareholders pick up efficiency costs. But the NDP changed their position from the election like they've changed so many other election positions and sided with big business. Now it turns out, Mr. Speaker, the Premier wants to suggest the URB made that decision. Did not. I stood at the press conference with the Minister downstairs when the Minister trumpeted that this would be a Christmas gift for Nova Scotians to be taxed on their bills. So, and I stood here while that bill was debated before this House, when that bill could have charged shareholders, and the Premier knows it. Mr. Speaker, now it turns out government departments are bleeding money from programs run using the tax instead of financing their own energy upgrades. This means less money available to people and businesses wanting help to improve their energy efficiency. So, Mr. Speaker, will the minister ask his cabinet colleagues to stop departments from seeking their funding from Efficiency Nova Scotia for government-owned and operated buildings and make that funding available to members of the public?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, you know, Christmas comes all year round when the HST is taken off of power rates for everyone, for all Nova Scotians. But the government rate is we're paying into the system. We have the right to benefit on behalf of all Nova Scotians, the ratepayers, the taxpayers. In fact, the savings are somewhere in the range of 30%. Why wouldn't we want to save 30% on our power bills?
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, costs of higher education in the province of Nova Scotia are going up along with the cost of living. Life is getting more expensive under the NDP government, and students at our post-secondary institutions are really feeling the brunt of it. The Minister of Labour and Advanced Education recently announced that students can expect a $5.5 billion in assistance, but she was short on details. In fact, the minister's announcement that was supposed to be held last week was postponed and then canceled. Students are left wondering what is happening with this money, Mr. Speaker. Will the minister stand up in the House today and tell us what's going to happen with this money?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I actually just briefed the second of the two post-secondary student organizations before the House opened today. It was a confidential briefing, giving them a heads up on the details before an announcement is made. And I would just urge the member opposite to remain patient, and he'll get more details. Certainly, we've been listening to student organizations in this province, and they have told us time and time again that they share our government's interest in reducing unmet need and improving our social or our student assistance program. And we've been listening very carefully.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'll be as patient as the students that are waiting for the announcement for that money. There's a problem in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. The average tuition fees in this province are much higher than the national average. There are only actually two provinces in the country whose tuition levels are higher. And when it comes to graduate student tuition, we actually have the highest in the country, wow. Bar none.
Congratulations.
As well, thanks to this government, $75 million in cuts to our universities and our post-secondary education system, student fees are on the rise at campuses. Still, we get no details about student assistance. Mr. Speaker, education is getting more and more expensive for students and their families. Will the minister tell students today when they can expect real relief when it comes to tuition and upfront grants for students?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our government has been very clear from day one that the group that we are comparing in the statistics, as the member well knows, are undergraduate Nova Scotia students in Nova Scotia universities. And we are committed to keeping their tuition at or below the national average. And we have certainly been able to keep that commitment. And we are doing everything possible to make university education in this province, post-secondary education, in a more general sense, affordable and accessible to Nova Scotians, and we're committed to that, and we will stick to it. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, how is gutting $75 million out of core funding to our universities supporting a more affordable education system? It's not, Mr. Speaker. The fact is, tuition is going up in this province, especially when it comes to undergrad and graduate tuition. We've seen that. Stats Canada has spoken about it. And I just want to read this here. High tuitions are a deterrent to many bright and talented young people who want to acquire post-secondary education. Families are struggling to help their students pay for university. The NDP will continue to fight for lower tuition in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, that came from the leader, from the Premier when he was leader of the opposition. How quickly those promises fail when this government took office, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, when... Mr. Speaker, it's not what this government's doing. Recently, the graduate retention rebate was cut by $13.8 million, Mr. Speaker. Will the minister commit to directing that $13.8 million plus the $5.5 million recently announced to much-needed upfront grants for students?
Good job. The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Over the last 2 years, our province has invested $48 million new additional dollars to support students attending post-secondary institutions in this province. That's a record to be proud of. That's the highest contribution that any government has made. And certainly, we are very proud of these efforts. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for King's West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, on March the 5th, Talbot House closure was abruptly announced by the Minister of Community Services. At that time, arrangements were made by the Minister of Community Services to transfer 14 individuals in varying stages of addiction treatment, treatment that falls under the mandate of the Minister of Health and Wellness. Given the Minister of Community Services displayed her sensitive and caring nature last week by saying virtually nothing about the availability of current programs and services to clients, I am wondering, what role did the Minister of Health and Wellness play in ensuring that the ongoing treatment of clients who had been receiving treatment at Talbot House has been adequate?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Talbot House falls under the jurisdiction of the Department of Community Services, and I would refer that question to the Minister of Community Services.
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I stated before, Talbot House is run by a board of directors. We are the funder of Talbot House. The board of directors made a decision to close Talbot House. We took care of the residents that were on site. There was approximately 5 to 6. We found another location for them. And so we took action to make sure that their needs were being taken care of. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for King's West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, the minister can point fingers at the board all she wants, but the fact is she's responsible for treatment not only of the current residents, but also for those who are seeking residential treatment with options that are quickly dwindling. Mr. Speaker, the options to provide residential treatment for individuals with addictions in this province is decreasing at a rapid pace. Recovery House in Antigonish, a 28-day recovery program, had its funding discontinued by this government. Talbot House closed. Compass program, another 28-day intensive structured residential treatment program, closed under this government's mandate. My question to the Minister of Health and Wellness, how will wait times for individuals with addictions who need intensive structured treatment go down when the options available for this type of treatment in this province are disappearing?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, addiction services are very, very important services to have in place for people who need to go through withdrawal, often through a residential-based program, Mr. Speaker. And then we can provide a variety of options to people, including ongoing treatment and follow-up. And frequently, these programs can be done on an outpatient or day program basis, Mr. Speaker. With respect to the COMPASS program, the member started to ask me some questions about that yesterday. That program was not being fully utilized. 40% of the time, the beds in that program were empty. Although we were funding it, it wasn't a good use of resources, Mr. Speaker. We have now redirected those resources into the detox program, the inpatient program, and in fact, the number of days that people will be able to be in that program will be expanded, Mr. Speaker, threefold. So, in fact, we're reinvesting in a model that will see better treatment with better outcomes for people, including our inpatient program, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The reality is, Mr. Speaker, that structured residential treatment is, for many, the best option. The government has dismantled addiction treatment options in this province without ever having released a mental health and addiction strategy. It's like the minister is hoping these individuals who do not respond well to community-based program just go away. How will the minister ensure those requiring structured programming to deal with their addictions are able to get treatment in a timely manner?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, as I indicated, we are taking a variety of initiatives to improve access for a greater number of people in Nova Scotia, be they children, youth, or adults. Faster assessments, expanded treatment, appropriate treatment, treatment and services that are based on evidence for what works, what will be effective, and at the end of the day, Mr. Speaker, more people will be seen without having to infuse resources. We're using resources in the system more effectively, and we are investing strategically, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Justice. Yesterday we learned that on November 15th, the Department of Community Services knew that an alleged pedophile was employed as a bus driver for the East Preston Daycare. The Department of Justice was the obvious source for this information. Will the Minister tell us what exact date he became aware of the risk to preschoolers at the daycare?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, and I want to thank the member for that question. I just want to add to my colleague's position on this is that the important fact here is that when there's allegations or alleged actions made in our communities is that a report is made to the appropriate police agency, and in this case it was done. And I have all the respect for the police officers in this province, but a common thread that seems to be coming from the third party is that they lack confidence in the qualities and skills of our highly professional police officers. And that's a bit disturbing, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we would have confidence in this Minister of Justice if he could provide us a date. So, Mr. Speaker, we have placed great emphasis on this matter here in question period because the allegations of past abuse by this individual are very disturbing. If they are true, we are concerned another young person could suffer the same experience. My next question, what steps did the minister take to protect the children when he knew that they were in the presence of the alleged pedophile?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to assure all Nova Scotians that I, as the Minister of Justice, take any actions that are aggressive or violent against a child or abusive in any manner, and I take that seriously. And the Department of Justice acts promptly on all allegations and issues. And as my colleague had mentioned, on the date that her office became aware, they took the appropriate action by notifying the police and then allowing the process. And she did that immediately as reported in the House. And I stand by my colleague's comments.
The The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, parents want to know that their children are protected from alleged pedophiles. Who from the Department of Justice met with who from the Department of Community Services on the phone, in person, or by email, and what information was conveyed to protect these children?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Another part of this whole process is that our judicial process is well respected, highly professional, and does an excellent job. Public prosecutions, who are an independent body, look at all issues such as this that come forward and look for the substance in regards to allegations. Remember, we must respect allegations while at the same time ensuring the rights and safety of all children. I take that job seriously and I act on those matters promptly, and I have all the confidence in the steps that were taken to this date.
The Honourable Member for Richmond. Hey.
Mr. Speaker, in the first three full months of this year, there have been 10 reports of shootings by the Halifax Regional Municipal Police. The issue of violent crime has been brought to the Justice Minister's attention in this House by myself and others on numerous occasions. But as of yet, the Minister has failed to take any proactive measures in developing a violent crime prevention strategy for both HRM and the province of Nova Scotia. Now, my question to the Minister is, why does the Minister refuse to address violent crime in the province of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the member for the question, and it gives me an opportunity to outline that as Minister of Justice, I take all matters that deal with violence seriously, and that I, over the last year since, and I reported in the last time this House sat, is that I've been meeting with colleagues throughout the justice system. In fact, I've recently met with the police, both the RCMP and the Halifax Regional Police, and I compliment them on the strategic steps that they're taking to do enforcement when violent incidents are occurring. And I want to point out to Nova Scotians that they are doing a phenomenal job when a violent situation occurs. I'm going to stop my answer at this point, and I will add more when he gets his next question to outline some other key points that need to be outlined.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we don't have much to say. I guess it's best to pace yourself to try to stretch it out a bit more. Mr. Speaker, ironically, this is a government which is very fond of strategies, as we heard of five new ones in the throne speech times four. Mr. Speaker, we have seen from this minister quite clearly is that he's only interested in reacting to events. Mr. Speaker, gun crime is a very serious issue and is one that only seems to be getting worse as the months and years continue. It is an issue here in the Halifax Regional Municipality, but it's also one that's affecting lives throughout the province of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians need to know that the Minister of Justice is taking measures to ensure that gun crime is addressed once and for all. Mr. Speaker, yet after almost three full years in office, we have nothing in the terms of a proactive strategy to address violent crime in this province. So my question again is, when will the minister stop reacting to issues and develop a strategy which would address violent crime in our province?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I will take some time to speak a little longer. Since the Honourable Member has put an invitation out to me to go beyond just a brief answer and give a more in-depth answer, and I'm very happy to do that, Mr. Speaker. I want to outline that some of the steps that we've taken in direct regards to domestic violence. And recently I just spoke and gave an overall presentation on the strategic plan that I, as Minister, and the Department of Justice are giving. We gave that at a forum. I guess I should have put an invitation out to the member, my colleague there. I also want to point out that in that presentation that I did, we talked about collaborating with some of the best practices, and there's one that we identified in Chicago under the ceasefire program, and we're working with the Municipal Police Department to bring in this program that addresses violence of this nature, that the research and the academic support around that shows that it works. We're looking in that, sir. We're also expanding the restorative justice initiative within the province. And we are a world leader in this area. We're partnering with Dalhousie University. And I will say more to tell about all the good things that we're doing in the next part to a supplementary question. And I thank the member for his question.
The honourable member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, it's ironic because it took three full years to have the minister stand in this house and talk about the Chicago experience that they're now going to try to implement. Nova Scotians are asking what took so long and why isn't this addressed 3 years ago? Mr. Speaker, the reports from Halifax Regional Police speak for themselves. January 1st, very first day of this year, a shooting at the Metro bus terminal in Dartmouth. January 11th, several gunshots in the area of 200 block of Ross Street in Halifax. February 6th, police respond to a report of shots being fired in the area of Demetrius Lane and Victoria Road. March 24th, shots fired near Grafton and Carmichael Streets. April 2nd, a man had been shot in Dakin Drive in Halifax. Mr. Speaker, this is a serious issue that for years now, the last 3 years, we've been calling upon this minister to put a strategy in place to allow our police officers and our communities to be able to battle gun crime and to make our streets safer. So my question again to the minister, why will you not announce a formal violent crime prevention strategy for the province of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. There's just so much in there that I could talk about and say into the great things that the Justice Department are doing, that the Municipal Police Departments are doing, that the RCMP is doing. Taking three full years, it's a matter of looking at some very complex problems and working. The issue of violence in our society is not something that occurs overnight or that has occurred overnight. It is not something that's exclusive to this community and this community alone. I am very confident in the quality of professional services by our police departments to deliver services. And one area that I spoke about is the Chicago ceasefire program. Those types of programs take time. And I hope that he would trust and respect the judgment by our police leaders and our justice colleagues that they're making some sound decisions there. Also, on the restorative justice and expanding that program and working, for example, with Dalhousie University on a pilot project that where we can start to look at reducing the impact on our police officers in the community to deal with crime so that they're freer to work on some of these other issues. But the main part of dealing with violence in society is dealing with the underlying causes, and we're working on that. I want to say I can hear from my colleagues about giving a speech. The member, my colleague across there, asked me to give more detail. They can't have it both ways. It seems to be typical.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, last fall, the President of Michelin Canada, in an unprecedented move, came to Law Amendments Committee condemning the NDP's first contract arbitration, calling it a threat. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Since ramming through first contract arbitration last fall, has she or the Premier had any follow-up meetings with Michelin executives about their future investment in this province?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Mr. Speaker, if the timeline was since first contract legislation was either voted on in here or was implemented, no, I have not personally had any meetings with representatives from Michelin.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for that forthright answer. Mr. Speaker, on January 26, 2012, Michelin announced it was suspending its Hungary expansion over government policy, saying, and I quote, "The attitude of the current government, the new taxes and the new laws make the economic environment unpredictable." And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker, when I finish my questions.
Even in Hungary.
Mr. Speaker, at Law Amendments Committee last fall, Michelin Canada President Dana LeBlanc said, simply put, "It makes it very difficult when you have legislation such as Bill 102. And the instability in the legislation, it makes my job and other people's jobs very difficult to sell Nova Scotia as a better place to invest in." So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister. Since passing this risky labor legislation, has Michelin indicated to the minister that it will make future investment in Nova Scotia, or do NDP laws make the economic environment too unpredictable?
Minister of Labor and Advanced Education.
I can state quite emphatically that all businesses in this province, small, medium, and large, benefit from a stable labor relations atmosphere, and that's something that we are working towards. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria de Lakes on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, Tuesday, Michelin announced plans to hire 500 workers, build a new plant, and expand an existing plant in South Carolina, not in Nova Scotia. Mr. LeBlanc said that our province's labor law doesn't help me build a case for Nova Scotia in the future, and that South Carolina has shown that it is pro-business. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Will the Premier admit that since his first contract arbitration legislation is stifling business growth in our province and putting 3,500 good Michelin jobs at risk, will he rip up his risky law before it's too late?
500. Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, the legislation that came into effect just a short time ago and before that was debated here in the legislature. Of course, is a very good piece of legislation. It's some 80% or more of Canadians are already covered by similar kinds of legislation, Mr. Speaker, and it provides the kind of stability that the minister mentioned. The reality is I have a lot of contact with officials at Michelin. I talk to them regularly. I just recently spoke to Pete Selleck, who was the new North American president. He wanted to talk to me about the plants here in Nova Scotia. He expressed his confidence in those plants. He indicated to us that they continue to have a world-class workforce. There continues to be great opportunities in Nova Scotia. And that expansion in this province, of course, competes within the Michelin family for work. In South Carolina, the plant that they are building was actually built on a site, just to give you an example, that was purchased and made ready for Michelin some 13 years ago. And so it takes a long time for them to get the approvals for capital expansion, and that's part of their internal process. Mr. Speaker, I've made it perfectly clear to Michelin, we look forward to working with them. We expect to work with them in the future, and we expect that they will continue to invest in what has been a very good set of plants for the province of Nova Scotia and for the company of Michelin.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Justice was recently quoted in the Chronicle Herald as saying, quote, "Anyone who thinks building more jails and putting more people in jail is a solution, in my opinion, they're delusional," end quote. Mr. Speaker, these comments are ironic considering the fact that building more jails is precisely what the federal Harper Conservative government is doing through Bill C-10, requiring the provinces to build more jails at taxpayers' expense. My question to the minister is, can he explain why this is the first time we are hearing of his opposition to building more jails?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
I want to thank the member, Mr. Speaker, for that question. It's an excellent question. This government made a decision to replace two aging facilities. At the time of going forward with building and with that decision, we also looked at the impact potential that C-10 may have. So we took a strategic approach and looked at taxpayers' dollars and how to make a decision that may deal with current concerns with flow within our correction facilities, plus deal with potential future issues. There is a distinct difference between ideologies from where I sit on building. If you build it, you will fill it. So my position, Mr. Speaker, is that we're building one that meets our current capacity and deals that we anticipate as future impacts in this province. And I think it's very important that we look at the taxpayer and all these issues, because it's their money we're managing.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it's refreshing to finally hear the Minister of Justice. What's unfortunate is that when we called upon both him and the Premier to stand up to the federal government and tell them the province of Nova Scotia will not have taxpayers' dollars going to build more jails to suit a federal policy of the Harper government, they both fell silent. Neither the Premier stood up, neither the Minister of Justice. Yet other provinces, the Premier spoke up, Ministers of Justice spoke up. Ontario, for example, calculated that if this bill is implemented, it could cost the province of Ontario an extra $1 billion of taxpayers' funds to go build jails for Prime Minister Harper. The question is, why was our
order,
Premier...
Order, please. The time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has expired. Before I finish up in the question period thing, I would like to make a reference here to one of our former speakers who would be well aware of Murray Scott. And I'm going to say that on October the 16th, 2003, Speaker Scott ruled that respect to a letter, the Speaker observed information that would reveal the author had been removed. He ruled that any document that is not tabled in its entirety is completely and therefore out of order. Speaker Scott ruled that thereafter, any member who was going to table or read a letter or quote from a letter should first announce that it is, in fact, signed by the author. Speaker Scott went on to address the issue of tabling printed copies of electronic communication.